Under the Side of the Human Rights Commission, we were part of the humanitarian working group, trying to coordinate some of the civil organisations' response to the humanitarian needs during this crisis. Under that banner, we've been very much involved in the sites around Johannesburg and Kurileni, mainly monitoring the sites on a regular basis and producing reports that are site-specific as well as summaries, so we have a very clear sense of what's happening on the ground. We also have been involved for over many years around research to issues specifically relating to the crisis in the last month, be that around trauma, xenophobia, migration, and other issues. I'd like to point out that this is not new. Xenophobia and violence towards foreigners is not a new phenomenon in South Africa. It's something that has existed for a long time and is very well documented. We also have to recognize that South Africa has a culture of violence. We tend to use violence to resolve personal as well as societal challenges. And although that comes from a history of violence and systemic violence, it has remained unaddressed and remains a fault line to democracy. We also have what we feel is an outsider insider phenomenon, and that is that we attack others, or we attack those who we see as others. We also attack those that are more vulnerable, and the danger in that is that the xenophobia at the moment is the attack is being done. Others are being seen along national lines, but it could be extended to issues such as ethnicity. I think we do need to recognize that South African communities are very frustrated. This is something that's not new and is coming out very strongly around the xenophobia. People are complaining about poor service delivery. There's disappointment around the expectations of what post-apartheid South Africa was going to bring. There's also scarcity of resources and opportunities, which are making people very frustrated. And one of the highest complaints that we hear from South Africans through research is that they are not being heard. In terms of a response to the violence, we feel that the key people that have been central to responding to the violence has been ordinary South Africans, CBOs, faith-based organizations, community-based organizations, NGOs, civil society organizations. Had it not been for those people, the crisis would have been far worse. We feel that government's response has been slow and uncoordinated and has been done with insufficient consultation, which has resulted in many mistakes that could have easily been prevented. And we really sincerely hope that government will learn from this experience and take it forward in the future to not make these mistakes again. At the same time, we do know that there have been instances in places where community structures, including local government, have been strong, that violence was averted, avoided, or mitigated. And we feel that that is an area that needs to be encouraged. In terms of going forward, looking at the displaced people, we still continue to need to address the humanitarian needs of people in the sites. The monitoring of these sites is vital, and the conditions in which we treat people at these sites needs to be done in a humane way that restores dignity. We still have areas of concern around protection within the camps, security concerns, nutrition concerns, especially for women and children, lack of psychosocial support for victims, as well as the treatment that they are receiving by people that are coordinating the camps that are there supposed to be helping them. We continue to ask government to address these responsibly. We have created a website called www.saemergency.info, and we encourage, and this is created to exchange information about the current crisis. We encourage people to use that as a way to gather more information, but also to add. The next step that we need to look at is towards integration. I think we need to be cautious here. We know that integration is a very complex problem, and it's a process, and if it's not handled correctly, then we're going to have serious consequences. We know that from other countries such as Kenya and Rwanda, but also within our own countries, we look at how the lack of integration of ex-combatants has impacted on their lives and continues to impact the South African community. We are talking about integrating people back into communities where they've experienced extreme violence and loss. We need to take this seriously. We need to support people, the victims themselves, through the trauma they've experienced. But the most important is that we need to focus on the South African community where this violence has occurred. And in terms of that, we need to build trust. We need to investigate the underlying causes and address these constructively. We need to lay the groundwork for conflict management and resolution. We need to give a voice and a space so that we can listen to the community, so that they do not feel that the only way that we can hear them is through the use of violence. And we also need to create awareness and address the myths around migration and migrants, including refugees. We really do need to keep an eye on the fault lines to democracy. And these are often highlighted by NGOs such as us and such as other NGOs that are presented here today, but very often also ignored. We need to work together to address these issues constructively. And together, I mean collective citizens, each one of us, foreigners, civil society organizations, and governments at all levels. And I plead for people to ask themselves, what can I do today to address this issue? Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. If you ended up with a note that goes to each individual, that became, let's say, what can I do today to contribute to the resolution of the problem? I'm advised that Johannesburg Metro is here. So I assume that they are not. Okay. And then the Department of Justice. I'm certain that Kosat is here. Maybe she'll ask Bongan to have a word. Then come the chair. All protocol of that, we want to briefly also relate to the issues that have been raised by various speakers since this morning, from the minister to the chairperson and all other issues that were made. I will not delve much into the issues that have already been raised, that we had hoped to raise, but we particularly focus on those that have been raised. I think there are two parts of our very brief. The first input relates to the background, to the issues, and then the last input relates to the recommendations or lessons from the current process. First of all, we want to indicate that several processes have taken place since the occurrence of the xenophobic attack, particularly around housing and Western Cape provinces. One of them was an initiative that took place in Mozambique just last week, which was a conference by SADC, civil society, which established a steering committee to drive the issues around the anti-xenophobia throughout the SADC region. But let us first of all seek to understand the context in which all these things have happened. A few points have been observed. The first one is that we cannot doubt neither undermine the impact of the apartheid and colonial political economic structure. Because like it was pointed out in the morning that most of the time, apartheid and the colonialism designed the system in the whole Southern African region in such a way that there was dependence on South Africa by the rest of the economy. Such as countries also trying to develop independence of South Africa, their economies were brutally disrupted, including Mozambique and so on and so forth. To such an extent that they developed an integrated dependence on South Africa's economy. So what that means is that is perpetuated, that trend is perpetuated to the extent that the other economies cannot survive outside South Africa's army. So that is why there will forever be that, unless we disrupt those relations that were designed by apartheid to perpetuate independence. The second point that we need to say is that how far have we gone in transforming those relations, or in transforming the colonial the colonial or apartheid economy in the region, not only in South Africa, but throughout the region. And then the third one that we observed was that the violence that has been going on has got gender, class, and racial dimensions. To the extent that others have characterized it as Afrophobia. Afrophobia by the sense that it was particularly to foreign nationals who are of African origin, not necessarily foreign nationals in general. So that's why others have characterized it as Afrophobia. But also, I think it was well pointed out by various speakers, the gender and the racial dimensions. just one other question that you may ask. We may not necessarily have ascertained the extent to which they have contributed, but it will be useful to critically reflect on them. But the second point from the chairperson and the rest of the House are the following. The first one is that there are political problems, matters of economic underdevelopment, and related factors that account for the perpetual migration in the Southern African region. And they don't necessarily get behind this, but of course we know the situation in Zimbabwe, in Swaziland, those that are political in nature. I will come to those that are economic. Those that might be political in nature. And they must respond to that. The second one is that I've already indicated that labor migration system under apartheid was deliberately designed such that South Africa continued to use the labor from the whole of the Southern African region. So the able bodies from all the countries, Lesotho, for instance, the some countries accounted to have almost three quarters of these able bodied people working in South Africa. So what that means is that there was perpetual underdevelopment in Lesotho. So that perpetuity, that trend continues up to today and it continues to design the relations. The second thing is that the legacy, this legacy persists up to date. And also we must be able to interact with the social forces in acting throughout the region. But I'll come to what I mean by that when I make the recommendation. The last two points that we want to relate to chairperson is that the chances for a stable, prosperous and sustainable South Africa are limited, if at all possible, so long as it continues to be surrounded by a sea of poverty, political crisis, and unbearable conditions of underdevelopment. I think that explains itself, that there is no way you can resolve the problem of xenophobia in South Africa. This is a problem that is related to the conditions of the continent, it's a problem that is related to the condition of the region. So there must be a plan that goes beyond South Africa to address such matters fundamentally. That includes institutional capacity and the effectiveness of institutions like SADA. But then, the last one in our observation is that I've talked about the economic models and their sustainability. For instance, one of the discussions that we had in Mozambique last week was the following. Why does Mozambique continue to supply migrants in South Africa after 10 years of relative stability and 10 years of the highest economic growth in South in Africa? But when you look at the conditions inside Mozambique, they tell you that the conditions are really terrible. Poverty is extreme. Because the model and the economic structure there is that it continues to benefit an elite. So there's no way to change the conditions because you continue to have resources being supplied in the metropole. They supply Portugal, and to some extent they supply South Africa, and to some extent they supply other forces in the Western world. So I think we must review the economic models of Southern Africa because I can assure you, if Mozambique continues at the trend that it is, in the next 10 years, Mozambique will be one of the most unstable countries in the region. Because poverty is given, but economic growth rate is the highest in Africa. So what does it say about the models of neoliberalism and the models of economic structure that we need to sustain conditions of fair and dignified development? Growth rates on their own are not enough. You may have 10%, but if they don't take the question, don't credit the question of redistribution of wealth, so that we can be able to address those inequalities. Certainly, it is merely rhetoric, and in fact, it's unsustainable. The Asian model has already proven that. But with regard to migrant workers in South Africa, one question that we need to take is that we did a research on migrant workers, specifically from Zimbabwe. One thing is clear, employers are taking advantage of the vulnerability of migrant workers. To such an extent that you have a security worker who has worked for 8 months, who is working, who sometimes not paid for 8 months, because he can't report the employer because it's illegal. So employers are taking advantage. That's why I was not surprised when I think Umama was raising the issue about employers preferring foreigners sometimes. We are not necessarily saying that there must be no employment of foreigners, but the danger of staying South African workers against foreign workers or foreign nationals is also real. So in the workplace, the attention that is taking place already now between South African workers and migrant workers,